Good morning.
Good morning.
My daughter, Maisie, almost 3 years old now, is a good listener. By this, I mean that if you say something in one room, you may well hear her repeat it later, even if she was three rooms away at the time. Nowhere is safe from Maisie's ears. When we realized this, she was about 1.5, and we all realized that it was time to start watching what we say a little more closely. I mean, cursing was right the hell out. But we've also learned to pay closer attention to how we talk about each other, and about the kids, and about our friends, about anyone. We wish for our kids to receive and to show kindness. And with Maisie's listening ears and heart nearby, I am far more accountable for my speech than I have ever been. When I call myself an idiot for dropping a cup of juice, which I have done thousands of times, I can't help hear that now through Maisie. And it feels wrong. I would never spit that word at her if she dropped her juice. So what is she learning when I say it about me? And so I don't do that anymore. This is the first time in my life that I practice making a conscious effort to resist self-harming words. I don't think that I can explain clearly the gravity of that, how that change in my behavior changes my life. It's big. Being accountable for how I talk has changed the way I talk. So, my message this morning is that obligation is good. Even when it's difficult, and it often is, obligation is good. Unitarian Universalism has the reputation, as Rebecca pointed out, of being the place where you can believe whatever you want. Our commitment to welcoming, our commitment to theological diversity, is often mistaken for a blank check. The Unitarian Universalist assertion that says, "Give them not hell, but hope," is read by all too many as a sign that there is no moral accountability in our faith, that we are a place of anything goes, and probably already went. Reverend Dr. Rebecca Parker, president of the Star King School for the Ministry, has an excellent sermon outlining how very wrong that sentiment is. In her sermon, "Keep the Circle Whole: The Challenge of Unitarian Universalist Theology," she lists four specific things that the theological heritage of our anything goes faith does not allow for. I'd like to challenge us today to imagine the ways that each of these four theological options obligate us as Unitarian Universalists to action. It is well and fine to assert there is no hell. My question is, what are we going to do about it? Parker writes, quote, "In Unitarian Universalist theology, you can hold the view that there is no God. You can hold the view that God exists. But you cannot hold the view that God is the all-powerful determiner of everything that happens, such that there is no exercise of human freedom." Unitarian Universalism is clear that there is some measure of freedom accessible to every living being. End quote. Those who hold that humans have no freedom, no power, that our lives are predestined, or solely in the hands of God, are not Unitarian Universalist. Now, that doesn't mean they're wrong, and we'll get to that point in a minute, but it means that within Unitarian Universalist theology, everyone has a measure of free will. In accordance with my Unitarian Universalist theology, though I am constrained by the powers at work that serve to direct my life, I am ultimately responsible for choosing to comply with or to resist those powers. And those choices matter. Even when we feel our most trapped, even when we are denied the options that we would prefer, we do have choices, however ample or however bleak. Whether or not we believe in a God who intervenes in human affairs, we reject the notion that humans have no responsibility for the joys or the sufferings of humanity. My son, Max, is not a good listener. By this I mean that if you tell him to stop jumping on the couch, he continues to jump on the couch. And if you ask him, "What did I just say?" he's likely to tell you that he likes popsicles. That's not just a true story. I think that's happened at least 5 times. Max is the living embodiment of human freedom. You'd see him and you'd know immediately, right. So around our house, we have been known to remark that Maisie is a solid and Max is a gas. So in our house right now, there is much, much, much study of human freedom and the limitations of human freedom. As in, yes, you are free as a human being to make the choice to bite your brother. And yes, there will be immediate consequences when you exercise that human freedom. That's not exactly the way I said it to her. I joke because it's an emotional imperative for my heart. But in all seriousness, it is a sacred, sacred thing to watch a person grow into their own human freedom. And I am accountable, theologically, to create the environment necessary to help Max and Maisie learn the appropriate boundaries of their freedoms. Teaching them the concept of consent, the value of taking turns, and serving them with reasonable consequences to poor decisions. For me, these are elements of a religious education. The nurturing of appropriate expression of their human freedom is a practice every day of my Unitarian Universalist theology. My theology obligates me to make choices that facilitate respect for human freedom. Now, it is a direct effect of human freedom that we make poor choices. We don't call someone back when we say we will. We mean to bring a casserole to our neighbor, but we get busy, we forget. We imagine that maybe it wasn't that important to begin with. We leave a meeting angry, only to allow a disagreement to fester and cloud a relationship. We speak critically of someone, but only when they're out of earshot. These choices matter, and so does the effort to correct them. Being our best selves isn't going to happen every minute of every day, but every choice that we make is a chance to practice. There are two theological points that Parker articulates on the topic of salvation. Quote, "You can define salvation, healing, and wholeness in many ways," she writes, "but you cannot hold the view that there will be an ultimate separation of the saved from the damned. Unitarian Universalism is clear that all souls are of worth. Furthermore, you can see that this world is tragically flawed or wonderfully gifted or all of the above, but you cannot hold the view that salvation is to be found solely beyond this world. End quote. Therefore, we are obligated, as Unitarian Universalists, to resist the structures of oppression which are based on the false judgments and divisions of humanity. That's a big one. But to believe that Unitarian Universalism has something to offer the world is to believe that we have work to do, real work, in conversations, on our computers, on Sundays, and before the sun rises, with hammers and with tears. Because meeting our obligations, whether small or large, is not the thing that we must do in order to achieve our aspirations. Rather, it is in itself the achieving of our aspirations. The practice is the aspiration. For isn't this our greatest hope? To embody love in this world. Everything we strive for begins with this love, this respect, built from one choice after another, made with love, expressed with kindness. If I truly believe that the concept of damnation is constructed and is not, in fact, real, which I do, and if I believe that much of humans' misery, current and historical, can be directly traced to this constructed concept that some of us are good and some of us are bad, which I do, then to say and do nothing is to have no faith at all. When I say I am obligated, what I mean is that I am a practicing Unitarian Universalist. So how do I do that? How do I live into my obligation to resist structures of oppression? Little things. I read the next chapter of The New Jim Crow, even though it's hard and it makes me cry. And I don't pretend that the injustices it chronicles aren't enacted on my behalf as a white woman of privilege. When I meet someone who prefers male pronouns, I make it a priority to use male pronouns to refer to him. I talk to my kids explicitly about race, and I prepare them for the responsibilities of living in a racist society. I work hard to remember that I'm a person too, and I advocate for myself. My health as a woman is no less important than any man's. My family, no matter how queer, is precious. I live into my obligation to resist structures of oppression when I apologize for screwing up. These are little things, but every obligation that we will ever meet that rejects damnation for the fraud it is a little thing. Because it will always be next to a mountain of hurt caused by human division. But as the Jewish text, the Pirkei Avot, reminds us, you are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to desist from it. Finally, Parker asserts, you can be devoted to a specific religious practice, Christian prayer, Buddhist meditation, or pagan ritual, to name a few. But you cannot hold the view that there is one religion that encompasses the exclusive final truth for all times and places, not even Unitarian Universalism. Unitarian Universalism is confident that revelation is not sealed. The sacred impulse towards justice, compassion and equity moves in many times and places, in myriad ways that call to us and teach us. End quote. Therefore, I assert that we have an obligation to continue to learn, to acknowledge the mistakes that we make, and to be open to change. The theist from earlier, who says that our lives are predestined, controlled by the hand of God, may be right. We may well end up in hell, to all of our great surprise, to find out that everything that we believe in the here and now of the world is a mirage. All people of every faith are called to live with the paradox of obligation, to what it means to be a faithful person in your faith, and the ambiguity of not knowing. I was 19 when I came out as a lesbian to my Catholic grandmother, and I braced myself for the worst. I was ready, because I had long amalgamated everything that I saw as negative about Catholicism into a compact planet that eclipsed anything else. But her response was loving and kind in every way. Her Catholicism was not my Catholicism. Her Catholicism was so filled with love that she had plenty to share. It is my aspiration that my Unitarian Universalism be no less filled with love than my grandmother's Catholicism. And so I am obligated to practice this faith accordingly. We must be kind to one another, or else we have no faith. This Unitarian Universalist theological identity, within the circle of which there are still many, many more specific ways of understanding the universe, each with their own obligations, this holds us accountable. This is our religion. And the practice of our religion requires much of us. To claim a Unitarian Universalist identity is to claim an obligation to continue to learn, to be open to change, to resist structures of oppression, and to act in acknowledgement that our choices matter. But we, here in this room, are not only Unitarian Universalist, we are also members of this specific religious community. And the obligations we are called to here in this house may not be specific to Unitarian Universalism, though they are formed in the context of this faith we walk together. To live in community is to be accountable to one another, to belong to one another. Because the truth of the matter is that I need help. I need help resisting structures of oppression, not even because there is so much to do, but because even the little things are hard. I need help being open to change. There are things that I can learn in this community that I would never be able to learn alone. And sometimes I forget that my choices matter. Sometimes I forget that I can wield power in this world. And sometimes I need the support to wield it responsibly. And then there's love. My partner Ori and I took the kids out last weekend to buy a Mother's Day present for their other mom, our partner Lynn. And we had a great time in the store. The helpful salespeople fussed over the kids, even though, that's always a thing. But they were happy to see us there. They were joyful. And when we left, they gave the kids little treats. It was a great time. And on the way home, I asked Max what he liked best about our outing. He was clutching his little treat in his hand, so I kind of imagined I knew the answer, but I asked him anyway, and he replied, "I liked getting Ema a present. It's nice to be able to give a person a present." Not one of you has to be here this morning. But when I say, "Hey, would anybody be willing to play guitar in the service?" Scott said yes. And when I suggested that Rebecca might have something meaningful to say about the topic because I'm very smart and wise. And would she speak in the service, right? And would she speak in the service? Rebecca said yes. And when I asked Rev if he was going to take a precious Sunday off, or if he would be here with us, with me, in church this morning, he said, yes, I will be there. Kathleen put out the cups with water. Paul brought the orders of service downstairs, and Julie is going to do the announcements later. The choir shared an anthem, and every one of you brought your beautiful face. Not one of you has to be here today, but you are. Unitarian Universalism asks much of us. It asks us to be powerful, capable beings. This place, this house of fellow workers, is our laboratory. This is the place where we get to practice the loving kindness of our highest aspirations. It is also the place where we will make mistakes. But even amongst the mistakes, every obligation we meet can be a manifestation of love, an act of embodying our deepest aspirations. I am honored to do the hard work of Unitarian Universalism, and I am so grateful that none of us has to do it alone. Blessings.